So, to answer some questions, I see there's one here that's already in the chat. Sometimes it's easy to let the thoughts go. But I was wondering, if we find ourselves starting to get tangled with a thought or emotion, is it okay to label them or note them, to try to create some space in order to assist us in letting them go? Yes. That's one of the very powerful techniques that some people will use in doing mindfulness practice is use a mental label. It's often called a mental note. And it has that very function, sometimes by naming it or this kind of very clear, it isn't so much the label that's important, like exactly the right note, but it's using maybe a single word that helps you clearly recognize, oh, this is thinking, this is an emotion, this is happening. And that clear recognition can be a way of creating space, or stepping away from, or letting it just be there. And it's not always automatic using the note that it does that. But the advantage of using the mental notes, if you could get this hang of it and to do it in a way that is meditative rather than agitating, is you can repeat it or repeat that act of recognition until it becomes clear, the recognition becomes clearer and clearer until you're not identified or caught up in whatever is happening. And, you know, so it might take a while and... So, for example, if you're angry, just saying anger, that might not do enough. You know, you're so in it and involved in it and invested in it and so important. But you say it again, anger, and you're still involved in it. And maybe you say it a little bit louder in the mind or even make it a little bit bigger. You say, you know, this it really is anger. And you're still kind of fuming. And then you say it a little louder, this is really anger. And at some point, you say to yourself, I don't know if it's exactly this way, but it could be, for example, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, this is not so important after all. Or somehow that recognition kind of breaks up the authority or breaks up the involvement with it. If you do it long enough, and I'm sure for all of you, maybe you have to do it 322 times, but at some point it's like, okay, you know, enough already. But hopefully, you know, just my teacher in Burma, he would demonstrate using mental notes, and he would do it two or three times. Itch, and so. You know, and if it doesn't, you know, you don't have to do it, you know, 322 times, but I think you get the idea of what I'm trying to say. So I'm mostly affirming the question. So the first hand I see is Jerry. Jerry has to be unmuted. Now you're unmuted. Yeah, but we still don't hear Jerry. Oh, Jerry seems to have disappeared from the whole thing. So maybe, who knows, you can hear me, right? But I don't hear it. Oh, you know, maybe. Jerry.
First beginning to see all this becoming.
Gee. What's going on? Hold on a minute. You know, that's part of... Okay, so I think we're... Okay, so sorry, Jerry. I had the sound off because when I record earlier, I kept the sound off, but I forget to put it on. But when I turn the sound on, what happens from the YouTube recording earlier today, YouTube at some point automatically just starts playing things. And so when I turned the sound on to listen to Jerry, I started hearing Gil Fronstahl give a Dharma talk. And that wasn't quite the the thing. So, Jerry, I apologize, and if you're still there, if you could start over again.
I'm still here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you very much.
And listening to Gail Fonsdale give the Dharma talk may be more interesting than what I'm about to say, but the first thing is just to express my gratitude for the positive influence you had in my practice in my life for the last couple months. The question, I'm going to try to tie two things together. One is this, what you said about letting all thoughts just come and go and come and go and come and go, which I understand that. And I'm going to somehow tie that question in with the serpent from this morning. So I think I must have been taking you too literally and not understanding you, because when my chest trembles and rumbles, versus I have an itch on my knee, I'm afraid that there is some discernment that comes into play here. There is some, that if not all mental events in, to be seem of equal important value. Some things I want to linger. And just from my point of view, but this is where I, about like a mindful contemplation where you drop up, you take an idea and like you throw the stone into the water and you watch, and you just sit there. You're not manipulating it, but you're watching the ripples.
Great. Well, great. I appreciate the question.
I want to tie that together with the serpent. And then, is that all right? Because the two are related.
So are you ready for me to respond?
Well, we'll do the whole package and then I'll be quiet.
Okay.
Because it's on the same subject a little bit. So, but yesterday morning, again, the trembling, even when I mention it, it's the rumbling in my chest. And I can't explain the experience, but there were two, I don't even know if I saw them, but I experienced two eyes. And I knew right away that those were my eyes as a child. I mean, I don't know how to explain that to you. And that stayed with me. Yeah, I thought about it during the day a little bit. But I did keep telling myself, we'll see how this unfolds. And then this morning on the morning walk with the dog, which is not always that contemplative, because he's 90 pounds and he's a puppy. So sometimes I'm too busy being pulled around. But it came back into my mind that those eyes, it's not really eyes, but my heart. I mean, I have cognitively thought, I'm capturing my heart more and more. And now here the end. So now we're going to do the serpent thing, okay? So now I'm doing the serpent thing. I'm afraid of getting bit by the anthills. But at any rate, and who's my serpent? You want to guess who the serpent is? It's the little Jerry. It's the eyes, because I realized he's unscathed. Look what he survived. Well, you don't know what he survived, but like. And it's like, well, he's not really supposed to, is that a serpent? But he is. He's the courage.
Great, Jerry. Yeah, I think it's my turn. My turn. Great.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Sorry. It's my turn. So, discernment is very important for all this, for sure. And we have to use basic street smarts, and you know, to know what to do. If the house is burning down, don't just sit there and practice non-involvement, you know, just get up and put out the fire or get away or something. If you're sitting, and one of the primary characteristics of mindfulness when it's really mature is not just staying with the breath, but it's really to bring your attention to whatever is predominant. And so whatever is most strong and compelling is a place for where present moment mindfulness is practiced. And then we have to have some discernment about what to do with it. There are times when the wisest thing to do is to do nothing but let go, nothing but just to be with it without thoughts. And there are other times where that's not appropriate. If you're feeling physical pain, so you bring your attention to it carefully because it's compelling. If there's a strong sensation in the pain that something's about to be injured, you should move your posture. Don't get hurt. Sometimes we have upwelling of strong emotions, strong realizations, like this thing about the little boy, the eyes, that can happen spontaneously. You didn't plan it. And sometimes they're a very important part of our inner processing and unfolding. And if we just completely let go of it too quickly, we do a disservice to ourselves. But if we pick it up and start writing the great American novel about it, we also do a disservice for ourselves. So you have to be wise about how do you open to it, how do you allow it. And some of those things, like these eyes, maybe it's good to go for a walk and let it live in you in a different kind of way than meditation. Maybe it's good to even journal about it because it's such an important thing. But you have to understand the difference between what we do in meditation and other approaches and things that are needed. So you talked about dropping a contemplative question into your experience. That's a really wise thing. But many people in this country confuse thinking about things with meditation. So I tend to discourage people to do any kind of contemplative activity in meditation that involves thinking about things or dropping something in to evoke something to happen. Because I've put a lot of value in the process of mindfulness where we're really discovering how not to be the agent, not to be always the doer or the person who is in charge, except we're in charge to bring mindfulness and non-reactivity. And so keep it really simple, kind of pure mindfulness, and other things like contemplative reflection to do that at a different time. So let's go and take someone else's question. And I think maybe go to Farinaz.
Hello again, Gil. Thank you so much for all the teachings and offerings. The question that I had, I had a different question, but what you said brought up this other question that I have, which is, when we look up meditation in the dictionary, if I remember right, it talks about different definitions. One is the definition of, you know, doing this exercise where we're repeating something like a mantra, or there's a definition of awareness, bringing awareness to things, and there's also a definition of contemplation and reflection. So I wondered. What you said was very interesting, and so I wondered, is that also, and I think I was reading that in the past, that may have been more a definition of the contemplation, the reflection, and now it might be more, you know, the exercise that we do. And so I wanted to get your input on, are these really different things? Like, is meditation really just the exercise, like mindfulness or repetition of a mantra, bringing awareness to something, or can it also be this kind of contemplation and reflection?
Yes, great, wonderful. This is more of a issue of definition, and also of function, how different words function in different settings. But the word meditation or contemplation, so someone says, I do meditation or I do contemplation, it really has as much meaning as someone saying to you, I do sports. You know, I do a sport, you know. Well, thanks, you know, great. You are you an Olympic swimmer or do you play ping pong or, what do you do? And so because there's so many different kinds of meditation, so many different types of contemplation, what happens in any particular location, place where people are doing a particular one, for themselves, they say meditation. And they just mean what they're doing, not everybody else's meditation, because we have to talk in shorthand a little bit. And, you know, so you have to understand a little bit the context of it. And in our tradition also, there's different kinds of meditation. And so Vipassana meditation is a particular type. Loving kindness meditation is a particular type. Concentration practices are sometimes treated as a particular type. So when I use meditation here, I primarily mean a mindfulness meditation, the usage of our capacity for clearly recognizing the present moment. And when I use the word contemplative for, like, do a contemplative, I just kind of evoked this kind of, hopefully in an English word, that suggested a kind of way of spending the time in between your meditation that was in harmony with the meditation, that was radically different from being busy or how life is usually lived, or it feels a little bit like you're living, you're hanging out in a sanctuary, and you just want, and it's, you go into a wonderful sacred sanctuary, you just want, you just feel quiet and peaceful, and you want to conduct yourself that way. So I had that kind of broad, kind of generalized definition for the term. Is that okay? Great. So let's see, let's go back up here to the chat. I find it difficult to know the difference between an emotion and the story, a thought attached to it. They seem to be intertwined. Is it necessary to differentiate? If so, any advice on how? Well, the fact that you could ask that question already suggests that you do recognize some kind of distinction between these two. But, you know, there's no hard and fast. Sometimes emotions can just appear without seemingly any reference to a story, idea, to an event. They just seem to arise. And sometimes emotions arise because there's a story. Story comes first. Interpretation comes first, and then comes an emotion. You know, I'm sitting here quietly, minding my own business, meditation, feeling nice. This high school girlfriend thought comes up, and suddenly I remember what she said, and suddenly I'm just like filled with rage. The story came first, and then the rage. And sometimes the two are intertwined, and how they continue through time is intertwined. I think it's often useful to see which predominates in these things. Is it much more the story that predominates? Is it much more the physical manifestation of the emotion that predominates? Is it mostly our reaction to the emotion, like our preferences and our validation or lack of validation of them, our rejection of them? And I like to think of emotions as composites that are made up of thought, body sensations, motivations, feelings, all kinds of things. And so as we start being present for emotions, this kind of question becomes more and more interesting, that we begin to tease apart the different elements of an emotion and not treat it as a singularity, a single thing, in which case it has much more authority or weight sometimes or influence. So we're kind of breaking up the unified feeling of what it might be. So maybe I can take one more, and I'll see if I can respond quickly to what seems to be a long question. I noticed while meditating recently my breath becoming short and quick and trying to match a kind of energetic movement within me. When my breath resumes a slower pattern, that energy is still there, as if rocking me quickly and gently back and forth. It almost feels as if something is trying to come forward, or that my body wants to rock during meditation. Perhaps this is just my Jewish heritage coming through while in prayer. Jews daven, rock back and forth, and I think there might be something to Jews being most at rest while in motion. Cultural bits aside, I love any reflections. Yeah, well, this is a complicated question to answer just on a question like this. I would love to spend some time kind of unpacking or understanding what your experience is directly. But there are definitely times when the body seems to want to rock in meditation, and that's can be comforting, it can be disturbing. And what one does with the rocking, and always with mindfulness, we just bring our curiosity to the experience. But it's possible to bring interest to particular aspects of the rocking or the movement. For example, really tune into where it begins in the body, that kind of the source of it. And sometimes it's actually in the instructions that are given, and I was given this in Burma, and sometimes you actually don't want to allow the movement and hold yourself still and then bring a lot of mindfulness to what's going on inside of you, how the energies are moving inside of you. If the breathing by itself wants to get really quick and kind of agitated or something, sometimes that's useful just to let it run its course, and sometimes it's a sign that maybe this isn't so useful. And so some wisdom is needed about whether to take some deep breaths, take a little break, open your eyes, and let something settle. There might be some emotional release happening that needs to happen, or some emotional release that maybe if it's left kind of on its own, will get strong enough that maybe it's not that useful. For example, some of what the kind of breathing in some situations can be the beginning of a panic attack. And the movement rocking back and forth might be an instinctual way of trying to comfort oneself with the fear that one's feeling. And if it's, you know, it's really like fear is really getting stronger and stronger, generally it's a good idea to stop it. You know, just open your eyes, get up, do something else if it feels like it's, you know, spinning out. Partly because it's very important to get have confidence that you can pull yourself out of a panic or out of growing fear on your own. And then once you have that confidence in that, then at some point you might just let it run its course because you know you're not afraid of it because you know you can always step out of it. So that's a long answer to a question that I might not have understood really the root of the question, but hopefully something of what I said is useful. And as always, I do feel very apologetic that I can't get to all the questions, and I really appreciate questions. They're really great. And I hope that you'll have another chance to ask. And if you still, some of you have practice discussion this today, and maybe some of you have a chance to ask there. So thank you very much, and I'll see you back here at 11:15.